Okay. You can't steal an album, song title.
Wouldn't it be great if they stole the lyrics for Walk Like a Man, but they just put a whole new different tune to it?
Kind of like what we're going to do with Smoke on the Water.
Yeah. But that's good stuff.
Oh, no, we were going to steal nothing from Smoke on the Water but the title.
Oh, yeah, just the title, and then we're going to, like, hey, but we're going to tell the story, but we're gonna embellish it.
It'll be different water with different smoke.
For example, like, he was hanging with us, man. It was like, oh, we were smoking dope and shit. Like,
Frank, you know what? You're an idiot. Shut up, Frank.
You're an idiot. Then one of the guys said, hey, what happens if I throw this smoke onto the water there? And I said, hey, you fuck.
Go ahead and do it.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Sounds from the 70s with Gary and Rob, sometimes known as a young but dashing Lee Jacob. And Rob is no longer allowed to speak during the introduction. And we are coming to you outside the vast metropolis of our city to bring the show to you in some sort of town or hamlet close to the city, but not close enough for us. Today, Rob, are you crying?
I'm crying.
Rob is crying because I cut him off from the introduction.
I miss those introductions so much. That was my only time to not quite shine.
Yeah, definitely not quite shine. Today, I'm on the verge. You know what that means, Rob? I'm on the verge of not feeling well.
Okay.
So I'm close. I'm not there yet. I might not even get there.
Then it's not really a verge.
I don't know the words to use, but I've been fighting this off for 5 days, and my body can only take so. Everyone I know has the flu. Everyone in North America seems to have the flu.
Wonderful flu.
By the way, we're taping this show, and it's a day before fall. As we tape the show.
Yep.
And it really does seem like everyone that's around me, at least, and it seems on the news, has some sort of illness. Well, I've been around this for like 5 days, and I'm fighting it off. Usually, as Rob knows, I start the illnesses.
Yeah, and sometimes other people get them. Sometimes they're very personal.
They're very personal, and nobody gets them except me. Very rarely does somebody come in and then I get it. So that's why my body doesn't like it. My body doesn't like to join in on what's already an existing
disease. Yeah, it's like a used disease.
Yeah.
And somebody's had it.
So I'm fighting, but I'm feeling very tired. I'm getting very tired. And who knows? So I'm just saying today, if I cut corners, it's for the benefit of everybody.
Well, then let's cut some corners and finish outside of our usual hour and 20 minutes.
I doubt it.
I doubt it, too.
Today, we will be... That was weird. See, I'm not thinking straight. I'm thinking straight as in a heterosexual man.
Yeah.
But I'm not thinking like straight, you know, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm not all there. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're fighting for survival
right now. I am. I'm fighting my germs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So today we will be concluding our theme of Todd Rundgren produced albums in the 1970s with a review of Grand Funk Railroad's 1973 album, We're Not a Very Good Band. Sorry, We're an American Band. Anybody get that? You want to do the first episode of Did You Get That Joke?
Oh, yeah. Here's why that's
funny. See, they weren't a very good band. Anyways. By the way, I don't know. I haven't. Oh, yeah. I can do this. You see, I wrote the script like 4 weeks ago.
Yep.
So I maybe should have read it before we started.
I wouldn't worry about it.
By the way, Rob. I used to say about one of my girlfriends that she had a grand trunk. A big... it's funny now that I look it over again. A big caboose on her own railroad. I'm sorry. I ruined the joke with my laughing, but I haven't seen that for 4 weeks, and it was funny.
You forgot you ruined it.
I forgot my road, and I'm going, hey, that's pretty funny. She's got a big caboose on her own railroad. It's a grand trunk. Yeah, anyway. Now, I'm sorry.
Now the descent of the madness. Please continue.
Now, the other day, I hadn't seen that joke in 4 weeks. It's funny. And the other day, I already started figuring out, oh, I did. I figured out how many episodes we had this year to do, and more specifically, how many episodes until our Christmas spectacular.
Extravaganza.
Don't do that. I like spectacular. Extravaganza is way too flamboyant. And then we have our Christmas New Year's break. And as we tape this episode at, no, it's not near the beginning of September. That's when we were originally going to tape this show.
Yeah.
But now it's almost, well, it's September 23rd tomorrow because that's the first day of fall. We had some setbacks on taping for the last couple weeks,
yeah,
because of Rob and because of the people who own the studio kind of been jerking us around, and not in a good way.
No, a big dick deck.
Whatever. They don't understand that, so don't make a joke like that.
Here's why that's funny.
No, they won't get that. I don't even think they'll find that funny. So, anyways, we can only fit in, and this is hard to believe, we can only fit in one more theme and then a couple of episodes before our Christmas break.
And then never again.
And then the year goes by so fast. It's like incredible. But we still, I can't say that because... whatever. That doesn't mean we stop.
No.
It just means we've completed our episodes up until Christmas. Then we have to do more episodes before we actually take a break at Christmas. I know it gets confusing because we tape our shows 1 year ahead of time, but that's the way it is. We used to tape it 2 years ahead of time, but things got really fucked.
Yeah, we lost a year somewhere.
We lost 2 years. You know, one night we took a mushroom trip and fuck, we lost the whole year.
I planted some bad days out in the backyard, but I never lost a year.
Also, and this goes back, since this is an old script, but this is true. We were supposed to have our first band rehearsal in our new
place
facility.
Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, Uptown Mike canceled at the last minute, like literally. And for a very bullshit reason, which I will not disclose here, but
meow.
If you, yeah, yeah, without saying it, yeah. But if you send me an email at soundsfromthe70s@gmail.com and headline it, Mike's a prick, I will let you know the reason for Mike bailing on our first practice at a new facility.
And we will pass that message along to Mike.
Maybe. Speaking of pricks, hey, Rob.
Yeah?
How was your week?
Oh, it's a good week. It had 7 days in it. The days were of a length that I can't really determine because I was asleep.
No, tell us how your week was. You have all week. To think of something in 3 minutes or whatever. Don't just...
That's not the part of the show I concentrate on. I concentrate on the egghead part of the show where we talk about the music and such, and that's coming up.
Did you go to work this week? No, it's not where you shine either.
You know, I was hardly even home this week.
Why? What happened?
Because I was at work so much.
Oh, I thought you said you weren't at work because you were hardly at home this week.
I was hardly at home because I was at work so much.
Oh, well, people don't care about your stinking work.
They don't.
Well, that was always a good segment every week. It affords me the time to have my drink. Okay, so today we are not going to do what I wanted to do because I don't feel like it.
We're not doing that.
I tell you why I don't feel like it. As I was driving to pick up Rob today, I haven't even told Rob this. As I was driving to pick up Rob today, I have to pick up Rob, and then because Rob doesn't drive, don't like drive. Some sort of idiot savant,
driving
except
is...
without the savant, it's then we both have to go to the studio. Now, and this, I know nobody wants to hear this, but I gotta, you know what? I gotta vent. So it takes me 20 minutes or 15 minutes to get the Rob's. Yep. And then it takes like 20 minutes to get to the studio. Then when we're done and it's late at night and I'm tired, I got to drive idiot home. Yeah. That's Rob.
That's a drag.
Which is 20 minutes. Whew. And then 15 minutes home. A total drag is what
it is. It's insane is what it is.
Anyways, as I was driving to pick him up, I got one of my epiphanies of one of the songs on the radio, which really pissed me off. Today's going to be a very bitter show. I'm going to let you know right now. There's going to be a lot of...
And there's going to be some anger, and there's nothing I can do about it.
So what I wanted to talk about is the song that I heard... if anybody tuned in to listen to part two of our vault records that we have here.
Oh yeah.
We'll do that next week.
I remember the vault. That was great.
Yeah, we're gonna do part two of that next week because we can do that anytime. But I won't do this next week if I don't do it today. Because it's different. So I'm listening and the Ambrosia song. You remember that Ambrosia song, Rob?
I seem to recall Ambrosia. They were a band I never listened to.
Yes. Yeah, I like that. Yes, you know the band. Ambrosia was, and they like stuck it down our throats all the time, was Ambrosia was a so-called prog rock band, who they always wanted to be called a prog rock band, even though their hit singles were always the most insipid pop ballads that there were. They had one of their songs, which I can't remember because my mind's not working very good today, is that one. Remember that one?
No.
I can't remember.
That's what I'm trying to think. Ambrosia. I've heard of Ambrosia.
Children's music.
But
I'm just looking under the album that this song comes from. The song is, I think everybody knows this song, The Biggest Part of Me, which is a terrible title. This song comes from the album 180, which was released in 1980, and it's listed under children's music here on the internet, and I find that very apt. Anyways.
It's an insult to children, isn't it?
As an insult to children. I'm going to give you some hits by Ambrosia, and what I remember, How much I feel for you, baby. There's that hit, and then a couple other pieces of shit. Anyways, I don't want to taint anybody because we might do an Ambrosia album on here. I've listened to Ambrosia's first album, and it is kind of very prog, but it's very bad prog. American bands are very bad prog. They play very... Well, I said this before. Mm. Well, we did a theme on American prog music. We did Kansas and whatever. And I
said that... Crack This
Guy. And Crack This Guy, an album I really disliked. And the only album that I slept through... I fell asleep through twice. I have never... First of all, I've rarely fallen asleep during an album. And to fall asleep during an album twice in consecutive, not the same day, but I listened to it once and I fell asleep. Then a day or two later, I listened to it again and I fell asleep.
If you fall asleep that quickly, that means there's something you're trying to avoid.
No, I didn't fall asleep that quickly. I didn't put it on and fall asleep. It was like halfway through and I was going like, wow, this is numbing my brain. I need to turn it off. Anyways, we came to the conclusion. Anyways, I came to the conclusion that even before that, that Americans don't make very good prog rock. You had a very good summation about that in that it's based, unlike English prog rock, which is based on classical music. Well, classical music, it is based more on blues and basic rock and roll, which does not endear itself to rock.
No, it doesn't have all the different stuff.
Yes,
it has very similar stuff.
So the thing that that really kind of bugged me about Ambrosia was that every time I see them, first time I saw them was on American Bandstand, Dick Clark's American Bandstand, of course. And I can't remember what song they did. It was like 1978. And I think they did How Much I Feel and whatever, and it was sappy bullshit. And they were kept on saying, no, we're a prog rock band. And yet all their songs were like really sappy hits. And it's like, either you are or you aren't.
You
like,
want to be known for something without actually doing something.
Yeah. That's the part. So I'm hearing this song on the radio. This is the part where I tear apart a song that I've heard on the radio. I've done this four or five times. And it's not really the song musically, even though this is pretty insipid musically. It's just there's so many songs in the late 70s and early 80s. MOR songs, the middle of the road songs really
they were not good in the early 80s. I know
they're just not good lyrically in the early late 70s and early 80s. They were just had lyrics with the lowest common and denominator. But the funny thing is that you don't really seem to notice at the time, because at least I didn't, because I wasn't paying attention to much of the lyrics, you know, as a relatively new listener. And I think that was a lot of what had to do with the times. You just didn't pay too much attention to the lyrics on a top 40 station. Anyways, I really listen for it now. Even when I'm not even paying attention, I can hear the lyrics.
You cannot unhear them. That is what you're saying.
I cannot unhear lyrics now. It's almost something that comes with just listening to music for so long and being a part of it and just living and sleeping it for 30, 40 years.
Expect more.
It just becomes, you become good at it. Just like when, if you're a welder or a plumber and you do it, you can do it without even thinking.
You got all your steps down.
You know how to do it.
There's no wasted motion in what you're doing.
And I think Rob will agree with this. When you listen to music a lot and you become really experienced at it, you just hear things without even thinking about it. Yeah, you hear the bass that you might not have heard in 1978 or whatever.
You might have heard it, but you couldn't identify it then. Now you can. You've grown education-wise.
You've grown education-wise, just like with everything. You just get better at it, and everything pops out at you without trying. You don't have to go, what's the lyrics like? Let me hear them. You just hear everything without trying, really. So I'm listening to this and I'm going, right from the beginning, it's like there's a new sun rising. Like, how many suns are there? There's a new sun arising. And we've talked about this before. Well, we might even talked about this last week. I don't remember. About how lyrics that you may sound good in a song, but are just not part of what you would say in real life.
Yeah, not part of the human speech that not part hear of human speech. Any human use.
Now, there's a new sun arising in your eyes. I can see a new horizon. That's so fucking stupid, and nobody would say it. And it really see it, even as I go over this.
But that's a great rhyme.
It's a great rhyme, isn't it? You can dance. You can slow
and
dance.
That's where the greatness ends.
And I can see a new horizon. Like, how do you see a new horizon in your eyes? What kind of bullshit line? That's the kind of bullshit line somebody pulls up to a girl in a bar and says, and never succeeds. Oh, you know what? I can see a new horizon in your eyes. And she'll go, loser, goodbye. That keep me realizing that you're the biggest part of me.
Yeah, undying pledge of pure, total love. I hear it all the time. Wow.
Need your loving here beside me.
Oh, that's where he needs it. Okay.
Fuck. Shine the light Need it close enough to... I don't even understand that. Shine the light. Need it close enough to guide me. He's lost, obviously. He's extremely lost. Even the situations are not even plausible. They're just words and sentences put together so that he can get to the part where he sings the chorus, "You're the biggest part of me." That is so demeaning. If you're a songwriter who tries to write intelligently, it's just such a slap in the face to just throw this bullshit together. And all my life I've been hopping. I don't know. Oh, it's not hopping, even though it's that's what it says.
Hopping.
All my life I've been hopping around.
There were some typos like that in the Bible, and it started some strange new religions.
I'm sorry. But it actually amuses me if it was actually I've been hopping around. I've been hoping you would find me because I'm lost. You're the biggest part of me. What a bunch of bullshit. I haven't come across this amount of bullshit since Sometimes When We Touch.
Yeah, but you put that to music.
Oh, it makes for soothing music. I was soothed. It is. Can I say this, Rob? When I was driving to pick you up at your place, I was soothed.
It's appeals to young women who are at the stage where you were 20 years ago, where you didn't fully listen to songs.
This is a band that claims to be, don't judge us by our hit singles because we're such a prog rock band. And yet they write this drivel, and yet they say, take us seriously. And I say, fuck you.
I know some other prog rock bands that have had hit singles, but all of those songs have been lyrically in there.
Well, yeah. Actually... You know, you take a song like I Know What I Like in Your Wardrobe. I mean, that's an extremely intelligent song. I'm not criticizing prog rock bands. I'm just criticizing
these
guys. When I hear a song that offends me, even when I'm not even paying attention, then they have to be on the show. And this is what happens. I'm not done. Says, well, make a wish, baby. Hey, baby. Well, make a wish, baby. I don't like baby.
Baby, yeah, that's a tough one.
Because that's a lazy word.
And it's not one that I would ever call someone.
No, hey, it's a lazy word when you're writing a song. You may say it even jokingly to your girlfriend. Hey, baby, how's it going or whatever. But you would never, in a song, it's just... You should just say, well, make a wish. As it goes, well, make a wish, baby. See, he just says it to fit it into the line. That's laziness. And he says, well, make a wish and I will make it come true. How the fuck is he going to make it come true? What happens if she wants to go on a spaceship to Mars? That's her wish. Is he going to make that good? Like, that's such a bullshit line. Now, I know some people are out there exactly are thinking and saying to me,
climb the highest mountain or swim to the deepest part of the sea.
Exactly. And I know some people are going to say, and they're listening and say, well, you're taking it to the extreme. No. Because, first of all, you'd never say that. And if you do, you wouldn't mean it literally. You wouldn't say...
Yeah,
you would mean it just to get into her pants. And I hate to be so vulgar, but it's true. It's like, well, make a wish and I'll make it come true. That's so bullshit. You can't even make your own dreams come true. Or else we'd be in a mansion in L.A. doing this show.
Or you wouldn't be so lost.
And then he says it again. He says, make a list, baby, of all the things I'll do for you. Ain't. That's so romantic, too. Ain't no risk in letting my love rain down on you. Oh, I can't go any further. I'm sorry, Rob. Every line on this is just getting me mad. Ain't no risk in letting my love rain down on you.
Yeah, this is lyrics put into a song because a song needs lyrics.
And the record company wants a ballad for a hit single. Yeah. This is product. This is the Journey Foreigner type of we need product.
Way to go.
And there is nothing. Anybody who ever heard my review of the Grease soundtrack, I detest music that is just made as product. To sell people to get their money. And I'm not talking about the whole Grease soundtrack. I'm just talking about the last two sides. We can wash away the past. So I can't go on. I'm just going to end it by saying he says with this horrendously terrible line, "Ain't no risk in letting my love rain down on you, so we can wash away the past so that we may start anew." Not technically a terrible line, but nobody would say that. Let's wash away the past so that we may start anew. Oh, it's so sappy, and it kind of so went out. Not even in the 1940s in Hollywood did they use lines like this. They were pretty smart back then. This is the kind of lines that you would get in the most insipid soap opera, maybe. I'm not going to go any further because I can't. I actually can't. But I guess what we're saying is buyer beware. Stay away from songs like these. They're meant, it doesn't matter now. It's like 50 years old. It's about 45 years old. There's no reason to stay away from it now but if you hear it on the radio, just say to whoever's with you, your partner, and just say, "That song's terrible." It's soothing, I like the music. It's very attractive, but these lyrics are bullshit.
Don't listen to the lyrics.
We will have more songs if I come upon them on the radio. You know that I can't let it go.
These are punchy songs.
And they're all love songs. I did Stevie Wonder, yeah. Who I think Stevie Wonder is a genius. I think he's one of the greatest musicians ever. And he did one of the worst songs ever. He did one of the worst songs ever by a big time artist, which is "I Call to Say I Love You." Yeah. I lambasted that one. I lambasted "Sometimes When We Touch." There was a song I can't remember. There's just so many that I lambasted on here. I wish I could remember all the ones that I did, but it was bad. They're almost all love songs because they're just trying to get. They're just using product. They're not using real feelings. There are songs that will kill you. There are songs that will kill you emotionally because people put so much into them, and put so much of their heart and soul and think when they're writing either a breakup song or a love song. Because I have nothing against love songs when they come from the heart and they're meant. But when they're just pieces of garbage, they're the worst part of music that I can think of. Absolutely the worst. Anything that's made as product can die in music hell.
It probably will.
The Pina Colada song.
Yeah.
I tore that one apart. Because it seems like a smart, it seems like a really hip song. And you know what? I even think it was a hip song when I listened to it when it first came out. I'm just a kid. But again, when driving to your place to pick you up, when I heard it, I said, wow, these lyrics are so bad. And now that I've matured and realized it, it's like they don't have... In this day and age, they don't have these type of bad lyrics. I will give the credit to the new artists who've come since the millennium that their lyrics are actually very good. Some people will complain about, would like me and you, about, you know, they're all pop and they got no real people playing it. And that's all justified. But they don't write bad lyrics like they did in the 1970s and 80s. Whew.
Stinky filler lyrics, except it's not even filler. It's product. It has an intention.
It's not even
intention.
Meant to be filler, because filler is still is meant to be a song. But they say, it's not good enough to be.
We just have to lengthen the album. That's what the filler.
We just have to lengthen the album, but we still want that song in the album. This is just like we want money. That's what they. Everything that should be money. Called should be in brackets. We just want money. Okay, I got that out my chest. That's why I had to bump our record collection till next week, because I had to get that off my chest. And you wanted to say something about that for a second, Rob, which I find surprising. You're kind of miffed by that song.
I was, but then I forgot what it was I was going to say, and I realized it wasn't that important, so I moved on to something else.
Okay, so today's album that we are going to review.
How about those drinks of water?
Yes, that's a drink water break. We are looking at the Todd Rundgren produced album "We're an American Band" by Grand Funk Railroad, released in 1973, 50 years ago. Actually, I just realized that 50 years ago. This year, and let's go over this. You, by the way, are going to be, if you don't mind, do the first review of this, and I will chime in with my second review.
All righty,
if that's okay.
That's so, what you seem to think you want. That's what you're gonna get.
Don't threaten me.
I have to threaten you.
Now, Grand Funk Railroad, often short. I've never short. Well, yeah, we shorted the Grand Funks.
Sometimes in conversation when you're
in conversation at Grand Funk. I don't like.
But if I'm actually introducing someone new, this is Grand Funk Railroad.
I never say when they did shorten the name to Grand Funk on the albums. I never said, "Oh, this is an album by Grand Funk." I'd say, "Oh, it's Grand Funk Railroad, whatever." Even if it says Grand Funk on it. But if you're in conversation and say, "Hey, what do you think of Grand Funk?" And they go, "Oh, that's bullshit." I say, "Yeah, me too." yeah, me too, buddy. I like you. Everybody knows they're an American rock band formed in Flint, Michigan in 1969 by Mark Farner, who plays guitar, some keyboards, harmonica, and writes 90% of the songs, the original songs. Don Brewer, who plays drums and does the occasional vocals. He does vocals. Half of them on this album. This is the most he ever has ever done in an album, both writing-wise and singing-wise. And Mel Shocker on bass. Every time I think of Mel Shocker on bass, I always think of one of my favorite lines, which is in the Rolling Stone album guide from 1983, something like that. I bought it right away.
This is going to be acerbic.
It is. It was by Dave Marsh, and he said, and he just laid into Grand Funk, and he just said, and Mel Shocker's always makes me laugh. It is one of my favorite. I don't like when I talk about, you know, like savage, like they used to. Like I just like to read it, but I would never say stuff like that because as a musician, it's kind of rude. But he said, and it's great that they have the buffalo fart sound of Mel Shocker on bass. And yet it's true. The reason I laugh is because it's true. If you listen to especially the early Grand Funk, Mel Shocker's bass sounds like buffalo farts.
Like a heavy low a lot of low end on it.
I always love that. And of course, this goes back. Everybody now, a lot of kids know Grand Funk from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
The classic episode where
they're going to Lollapalooza.
And Homer knows all the members. He did just what I did.
The adequate drumming of Don Brewer.
That's what he did. How do you remember the long flowing hair of Mark Farner?
is the impression that a lot of people nowadays have because of that.
And
it had before, kind of.
They had the shot of the kids in the back seat. They go, they're all just staring. I'm like, who the fuck are you talking about? And I think that's what a lot of people remember, because it's one of the classic moments of The Simpsons, because Homer never remembers anything, right? But he remembers about Grand Funk Railroad. As you know, they had lots of actually hit songs for a band
they were also spread out over the years.
And they were spread out. It started from near the beginning until they broke up, initially broke up. I have to admit that I have heard every Grand Funk Railroad album.
I want to
It was just something that I felt that I couldn't criticize them unless I really heard them. So I many years ago, I listened to all their albums, and even their reunion albums, their two reunion albums that they made after they broke up. Of course, the songs that they've had as hit singles, and they're all good in some way. We're an American Band. I'm Your Captain.
Getting closer.
Okay, and of course, the cover of the Soul Brothers 6 song, Some Kind of Wonderful. The Locomotion, everybody remembers that. I think one of my, and one I think my favorite single of them anyways, I think this is a great single, and I didn't know for a long time this was,
because it doesn't sound like them.
Doesn't sound like them at all. Bad Time. To Fall in Love.
It's like actually the lyrics on that one. I don't like the chorus.
Oh, really?
The chords, specifically in the chorus, is the one thing.
It actually sounds like a real soft rocker in the mid-70s. But I like it. I think it's very catchy. I like everything about that song, actually. And it's very quick. It's like 2.5 minutes long, and it's over with. And it doesn't give you time, maybe, like you said, to dwell on maybe the weak parts of the song, because by the time it's over, it's over. I really like that song. It's one of the few times that they've shown a real capacity to be a talented band, because that was a very good single. And something cheer. I don't know what's that squeaking.
That's nothing. Don't worry about it.
Oh. Okay. Sorry if anybody heard that. I don't know what it is. So anyways, like I said, they formed in 1969. Blah, blah, blah. They started off from Terry Knight in the Pack. Terry Knight was infamous because the band from then became Grand Funk Railroad, or it was called, I made the joke, but actually there is a Grand Trunk Railroad in the States.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And they couldn't use that, of course, because of...
Did they try Chicago Transit Authority?
It's just like they couldn't do Chicago Transit Authority except for one album. So they renamed it Grand Funk Railroad, which is a great name because it's funky. It's funky. Yeah. Put music in there. And what happens is Terry Knight decided to become their manager instead of a member of the band. That's me. That's why. That's the sound.
Oh, he's got a bit of a clip there, that chair.
Yeah, I forgot that. And there was problems after that with mismanagement and him getting fired. But the albums that I really like for them are their early albums. I have no complaints about like their first three albums or whatever, where they were really raw. And they were never an extremely talented band. I'll tell you that much. But I do recommend their first three albums, and I can recommend it because they're all in the 60s, so we won't be reviewing them. And then they made a whole bunch of albums. They actually showed up. Now, it's a very interesting, convoluted story with Grand Funk because they were immensely popular. They were, and this has been said many times, I didn't coin it, everybody says it, they were the Nickelback of their day. They were.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. They definitely were. They were hated, and yet they sold out Shea Stadium. They even sold it out faster than the Beatles. They were loved by people like Homer Simpson, and I don't mean that as a put down. I mean they were the meat and potatoes guys.
Who would now be the classic rock fans?
Yes. Exactly. The young kids that were going to high school. Who wanted their hard rock? The guys
didn't
going
didn't
to
want
work.
To think too much.
The guys going to work in the auto industry who were young 20s and late 20s who were just wanted to
rock out.
Rock out.
Not think too much.
They loved them. They loved them. The critics hated them. There's an argument on both sides. It's not like Nickelback. I hate Nickelback. I'm not gonna compare them to another band, and I'm sure I'm not gonna compare them to a band that came along 20 or so years later, because it's totally different. It's a totally different time. It's a totally different sound. And blah blah blah. But there was never a hatred like that, like there is to Nickelback. To Grand Funk, there were some people who really liked Grand Funk that weren't just meat and potatoes. Back,
or the Grand Funk was mostly just disregarded. They're mostly
disregarded.
Just,
yes,
you know, there's not much here, or
and know, a good point it. Of that example is that there's a lot of people who want to get them into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I think for all the hit singles that they had, I wouldn't object. Of course, I don't give a shit about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But if you're going to mention it in a conversation, I'd say, well, why not? They had like eight, nine singles, and they had like albums that sold, you know, a lot of copies. They sold a lot of copies. They were a band that did unbelievably well and were hated by a lot of people. But they were also loved by a lot of people. So we got to make that clear. They weren't one of those bands that everybody hated from the time they started and just kept making records. Why are you making records? Everybody hates you.
They keep selling.
So like I said, Terry Knight produced most of their early records until he got fired for mismanagement and kind of stealing their money.
Oh, yeah. All bad.
We're only, but they made like, they made at least one album a year, sometimes two. They were very prolific. I'll give them that much. They made a lot of albums in 7 or so years. I'm not going to count them all, but they made a lot of albums. A lot of music for a band that was also busy touring. I don't know how these bands did it. I really don't. I know we talk about this almost every time we talk about a rock and roll band in the 70s. But how these bands made like 10 albums in 7 years and then toured all the
toured
time.
300 days a year.
I just can't comprehend it. And you know what? If there's anything to say about the bands of the 70s, especially compared to now or the last 30 years in rock and roll, is that bands in the 70s sure worked their ass off, no matter who they were. They sure worked their ass off. I've never seen one band that didn't just completely they have to, you know.
The successful ones certainly did, yeah.
Yeah, the successful ones just, you know, you got to give that to a band to constantly go out there and spend your whole youth. And a lot of them made money and they blew it. So, you know what? They not only worked a lot, but a lot of these bands at the end of the day, because that was also the decade of coke and all a whole bunch of drugs. They didn't come home with a bunch of money after it was all over. And then they'd have to, you know, I also like bands that, like Grand Funk does now, although I don't want to get into that too much, because I'd also like to review a Grand Funk album at the end of their career in 1976. But I like bands like Grand Funk that still tour, because they're not really touring for the money, even though it's good for a Grand Funk Railroad. These guys play to like not too many people because they like to play the songs and they like to be musicians.
Yeah, these guys play because that's the thing they do.
Because that's what they do. Now, of course, I don't want to get into it, but Mark Farner is not part of the Grand Funk Railroad because it all depends on who you listen to, their side or his side. But I do like that both are out there. Mark Farner is out there solo playing the Grand Funk material, and Grand Funk themselves with Don Brewer and Mel Shocker are out there playing the material. I love that. I love when bands, they go from playing Shea Stadium in their heyday to playing clubs and fairs, and it doesn't matter because they're just playing music. And I admire that. People look down on that somehow, and I say, how can you look down on that? They don't have to do it. They do it because they like it. They do it because they want to. And I think that's
and
great.
They're still not working day jobs like you.
So that kind of takes us to this album. They had made quite a few albums up to this point, had never really had like a huge breakthrough. As far as their albums were always kind of spit upon and sold, you know, sold enough, but didn't sell huge. It was, and their singles also did the same thing. The singles did well, but they didn't sell huge. This is where they broke. They got Todd Rundgren in to do, obviously they wanted like a more commercial sound, so they got Todd Rundgren in there, and they got We're an American Band, actually, one of the few albums, if maybe the only album that they did, that got really good reviews by the critics and sold an amazing amount. And of course, the We're an American Band is an institution on the radio now, even more than their other songs. It was a huge breaking point for the band, even as that was coming up to their later years, 73 to 76. It's probably what they're known for. If you have to name one album, you'd say, oh yeah, We're an American Band, and that's a song you name also. So, and then after that, Todd Rundgren did produce one more album for them, which was Shining On, which I did not like at all. We will not be reviewing that on this show. But this album does not have a lot of Todd Rundgren touches to it, as I think Rob will agree. It's very Grand Funk Railroad.
Yeah, I'm hearing mostly just the band doing their thing.
Yeah. And I agree, but he did put a lot of touches on their next album, which, like I said, is not their forte.
Sometimes
being buried in production is not their forte. I can tell you that right now.
Two great tastes don't go great together.
No, exactly right. And they kind of dispersed with the use of Todd Rundgren after that album. So now we're gonna get to the album in general. Now that I've laid the groundwork for Rob, Rob's gonna tell you that how much he does love this record.
What an incredible record this is. It's like this one fell straight down from heaven and struck me right on the nose. I was actually pretty surprised in that I had kind of had the Homer Simpson take on Grand Funk Railroad. This album is not like that. I found this to be kind of hard rock on the very edge of progressive. The songwriting style is really neat. I don't hear that anymore. That's definitely an early 70s, late 60s thing. It's a kind of that choppy style of playing where the band will be playing for like three or four bars and they'll drop out and just one instrumental play for a bit and then they'll come back in. I'm thinking like the James Gang or...
Yes.
Well, that style. You don't hear that anymore. And that makes me sad. But
James Gang, now that's a good band. We gotta do the James Gang one of these days.
Someday. It will happen.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about, where because Joe Walsh was just like Mark Farner is the only guitar player in the band, and they didn't do a heck of a lot of overdubs, so when the guitar would drop off and do a solo, you have the bass and the drums. Is that what you're talking about? Sorry,
that or that? Even more of a essentially, it's not all of the instruments played from start to finish all the way through. They'd stop for
I know what you mean. Like a Joe Walsh song. I know what you mean.
You know, they'd stop for a bar where just the drums would play, or they'd stop for a couple bars where just the bass would play.
Okay.
There were spaces in the music.
Yes, I understand now. Now I understand what you
when
mean.
When I play a song or write a song, I'm pretty much making sound from the start of the song to the end. There's no parts where I'm dropping out and letting someone else.
That's what I like about the James Gang, actually. That's what I like about an early Joe Walsh is, you know, where you go, dan, tuk, dan, 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 and then the band comes in. And then he will do that. He will do that again later on where the band will cut out and there'll be a guitar part. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, Bachman Turner overdrives in a band like that. Yes.
Well, you know how much I like that because it shows dynamics also, which is huge.
Stands out.
In all honesty, I'll let you finish, but in all honesty, I don't hear that here. Not as much as you do.
Okay. But, well, maybe I'm not expressing myself as well as I could.
No, I understand what you're saying. I know I understand what you're saying, but maybe I missed it or something. I don't know.
Let me think about this. Continue reading my review. I kind of like the songwriting there. The parts tended to flow really well. I thought the lyrics matched the music really well. The lyrics, though, the music, I didn't pay much attention to the lyrics when I was listening to the album. I had to actually go online, look up the lyrics, and then I read them as I was listening to them. I said, these are pretty good.
Are we talking about the same lyrics to this album?
I think we are, yes. I kind of enjoyed them. I thought they were pretty good. We're going to have two different reviews here.
We're talking about the lyrics from the We're an American Band album we're talking about, right?
You got it, brother.
All right. And you like them, you
see. I like them. They surprised me.
Okay.
I didn't pay them any mind when I was just listening to them, but then... When I actually read them, I was like, okay, they're actually doing something here. We are going to contrast sharply, aren't we?
Every man has his opinion, as I say. And then again, every man has an asshole.
Let's see. Yeah, I got through that, got over that. I shouldn't be going first, you know. But
you should have told me. Then I wouldn't have let you. Seriously, I wouldn't have let you go first if you didn't think you were prepared to go first instead of second. I would have went first easily.
I never think about it at all. So I'm not a first person. I'm more of a chime in guy.
You're the one who wanted to go first sometimes. You did.
Rarely I do. Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as taking turns, we'll see about that. But yeah, that's one of my criticisms. The vocals sometimes were more in favor of rock and roll than getting the actual lyrics across. So that got lost a bit. I liked most of the songs on the album. I liked the playing. I actually really enjoyed this album. And for me, this listening to it, it sounded like fun music to play.
You know what? Your review is not only
something that would come from the ass of a horse,
what fans would say, but it's also what critics who hated them had said about this album. And this is bands. This is some very critical critics who before would just slam this band and said, "Hey, this album's pretty good." Is they would be they're echoing almost exactly what you're saying.
Well, what I'm saying is from about half a dozen listens, and I found myself really enjoying this album. I was surprised. I didn't think I was going to.
Can I ask, even this early in the show, what you would give it?
Yeah. I give it a 4-star. I like it. Now we got ourselves a show, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. So
was there anything
I have to admit, this actually may be my least favorite, my second least favorite. I didn't, their next album, Shining On, I really didn't like because there was a lot of gimmicks to it and it didn't fit Grand Funk Railroad very well. I can tell you not only that I don't like this record, I think it's my second least favorite Grand Funk Railroad album. And like I said, I really like their first three albums where they kind of just plugged in and played. And they did the Joe Walsh, James Gang type of thing. And I really like those three albums. And it sounded like I farted, but that was my shoe.
It's this damn studio.
It's the studio. I really like this album. And I've got reasons to back it up. Musically, why I didn't like it is, and I've listened to this album quite a few times, not only like before this show or for the show, but in
years
the past.
Ago as well.
In the past, yeah, just to listen to it as well. And it has never enticed me one bit. And I'll tell you the reason that it doesn't musically. First of all, it's not a very talented band. And I've known that, and people know that in a way. But they can sound like it at times. Mark Farner can play some not bad guitar when he wants to. This sounds extremely boring to me. And I'll tell you why is the added keyboards on here, which I have no disagreement with. They added Craig Frost as regular keyboardist from now until the time they broke up in 1976. That's not my complaint. My complaint is that when Mark Farner would take a solo before, the music would be anchored rhythmically by an overdub guitar. So you would have a very rock and roll thing going. Now the music isn't even anchored at all except by the keyboards for most of these songs. The one exception is, of course, the incredible song itself, "We're an American Band," which does have the rhythm guitar as its anchor. This doesn't, and it sounds really weak to me. The music sounds weak. It sounds like if you ever have like a band where the rhythm is coming from the keyboard, it just doesn't have strength. It can't stand on itself, at least in my opinion. And it's a glaring thing to me. I noticed it right away when I first heard it. I said, oh, why does this not rock like Grand Funk rocks? Maybe other people who are not associated with Grand Funk
Railroad for comparison
would say, oh, this album
I've
rocks.
Only heard the radio songs.
Right. So I'm going, this album is kind of like weak Grand Funk Railroad to me. And I don't like that. I'm not a big fan of people letting the organ be the instrument. Not the instrument. I love an organ solo, but not the instrument replacing the guitar as the rhythm instrument. It just weakens it.
It don't work for you.
It's got a weak bass. Not bass, but it's got a weak bass as in BASE. It's bound, it's so weak that you almost feel that it's gonna fall apart. That's how weak it is. And that's not Grand Funk Railroad to me. The Grand Funk is like guitar. It's like having Black Sabbath and all of a sudden, instead of Tony Iommi playing all those rhythm parts, they have the keyboard do it, and all he does is solo. This is exactly the same thing. It's not exactly the same thing because they're two different guitar players. One's talented and one's not. But what I mean is if your bass instrument, and again, by bass I mean the rhythm instrument, has been reliant on a strong guitar, and then you replace it with a keyboard, it's going to sound watered down. It's going to sound not as strong as it should. That's one point. I got a couple others. One, and I'm going to bring this up right now. We're going to move away from the music for a second. I have never, except for occasions, thought in any regards that Grand Funk was a good lyrical band. I think Mark Farner very rarely writes good lyrics. It's not what they're known for. And I dislike the lyrics immensely on this album. I'm just going to give some examples. I wanted to give three examples just to not be smug and say I don't like them and then not say why. Shoot for the Star. This is the chorus of Stop Looking Back. Shoot for the stars when my eyes can't see the starlight. What the fuck? Sorry. Reach for the sun in the night. You kidding me? Reach for the sun in the night. Stopped looking back at the times I was defeated. I picked myself up. I moved straight ahead. I stopped looking back. Well, that's very good. But shoot for the stars when my eyes can't see the starlight. Fuck me. Reach for the sun in the night. Okay, I'm not going to, of course.
Filler lines hit or miss. Hit and miss.
Hoping my dreams don't blow away. I'm dreaming about blue eyes looking my way. I mean, that's stupid shit. I'm sorry. I hate when you say something nice and me to be so blunt. But I have to because it's what I feel.
No, you have to. Exactly.
I'm very offended by a song called Black Licorice. It's obviously about...
I thought you were going to be.
I'm
the exact opposite, though.
I feel that what's the difference? Should I have a song called Yellow Skin Licorice? Hey, love that yellow licorice.
But there is no yellow skin licorice. There is black. That is an actual candy.
That is an actual candy. I would never... who cares if she's black? Who cares if the woman
because
is
Because that's
black?
Part of the picture of what's happening. It's part of the description of the person. It's a description. You can't just get mad at a description because it's
sweet
the wrong
licorice.
Color.
You can say, I found it offensive. I found it extremely
offensive. I found it
offensive.
Charming. I found it...
How in any way is that charming?
Because it makes her different. It makes her special. It's a descriptor that she's not like the other girls, and this is why. There's two
because
ways
of
you
her
can
color,
take everything.
That's what makes her different?
Yeah. You could even say that, okay, maybe he's angry with her, he's broken up with her. Do we not all come up with a... No, I'm not going to put that argument forth, but I don't agree with you on that one. You can't just say using a word makes it...
The whole thing. Black licorice. What difference does it make? You could make a song about your woman being like sweet licorice or something. I find it.
I don't.
How many songs is it about like, oh, my white girl. I love my white girl.
Well,
come on.
That's not different. Not in this, in my culture where I come from.
I don't get your argument. What do you mean in your culture where you come from?
I mean, at the time, there was only white girls around when I was growing up. So
well,
that's
yeah,
what I'm talking
we
about.
We live in a country that doesn't have many black people.
As it didn't at the time.
Still doesn't in reality. You know what I mean. I mean, there's more now, but it's still very, very sparse. At least in the part where we live.
No, because they... I don't know. He shouldn't mention it. He should never, ever, ever.
He can
use
mention
a descriptor.
It all he wants, but I can say that I don't like it.
You can say that's not a descriptor. Well, if he doesn't say it, then it's just some person.
I do get your point. It's, in that he, but
you're taking away the descriptive language and saying, "Well, this is offensive," and I don't believe it is. I believe that's a perception nowadays.
In a way, I do get what you're saying.
You're
I
not
do.
Allowed to say someone
no,
is what they
Rob,
are.
No, I'm agreeing with you, so don't get mad. I do actually agree with what you're saying. I do actually, like, if you want the woman to know that she's black and you really love her or you have a relationship,
a bad relationship.
Then I understand. I still don't agree with black licorice.
You break up with a woman, you come up with a pet name for her. A name that she I did.
Why does it have to do anything with black? Why does it have to be anything with black? Why does it have to be black licorice?
You're not going to convince me on that point, but I do understand what you're saying, and I do agree with you. Like, if she's black, then I would say, oh, I have this relationship with a black woman. I don't think you have to call her black licorice, just like you don't have to call other women of other color.
I don't see it as insulting. I see it as descriptive.
Okay.
That's where we disagree.
We vehemently disagree on that one.
But Wicked Keyboard solo in that song.
I don't remember.
That's the only song that got the keyboard player solos, and it was actually pretty good.
Yeah, that's a stupid song. I ain't got nobody. Not
Walk
that it's
like
stupid.
A man. What did you? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, let me look that up. There was two, three. I forgot now. I'm sorry because it's been so long since I was going to review this album. I forgot. I always knew Stop Looking Back, but I can't remember. I think it was Black Licorice, but because of what you said, which we disagree on. But I do come over to your side quite a bit on this. Before, like when I started, I was really vehemently against it. And you know what? I do come over to your side a little bit. I do. In that if he's talking about a black woman, he should talk about her as a black woman. I just don't agree with the nickname. I think it's an offensive nickname. I would never call a black woman that.
What if the character in the song is angry with her?
Well, he's not.
Because she has hurt him.
Yeah, but he's not. Ooh, I'm going to strut my cock like I'm 99.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the one. This is the one I didn't like. Again, Walk Like a Man, really? Which actually, I've never heard this as a single, it has been mentioned as one of their big hit songs, which I've never heard this.
I know it's the one that got the second most listens on Spotify on this album.
Yeah. Okay. I actually look for that a lot now. Now that you mentioned it. I looked at it for this album. Because I did. I did really quickly because I did look at American Band, which was,
songs that were over 200 million listens. Yeah, we're in American Band as two decimal places higher, but this was the only other one that was a million listens or more.
See, okay, here's the line that bugged me. And I know it's only a line, but it just typifies the laziness. And you know what? I don't even think it's a laziness. I just think because when I look at the Grand Funk Railroad catalog, it's just what am I trying to say, Rob? Just not talented in the lyric department. And that's okay because sometimes you're not born like Dylan, you know, or Springsteen. Sometimes you're not. Yeah. In fact, 98% of musicians aren't.
And Dylan could have some lines in there that...
Exactly. Yeah. I make fun of Grand Funk Railroad. Mark Farner does play some pretty good guitar. He's not a great guitarist, but he does come up with some really cool stuff.
Some neat parts.
Some neat parts he does. But you know what I admire about Grand Funk Railroad is that they are not a talented band as compared to what was going on around them in the 70s. And yet they gel enough to make good songs. You know what I mean?
That playing together. Get to know how each other plays.
If they were a really bad band, they wouldn't even get a record contract. But what I'm saying is compounded to what was going on, they were not as good as the other bands. That just doesn't mean that they weren't good. But I do have problems with the mediocre songwriting. And I didn't like any... I thought every song was extremely average except for We're an American Band.
That one is almost perfect.
It is. And we'll talk about that in a minute, about how perfect that song is. And I will tell you why I think it's perfect. For every reason why I think these songs aren't. I just think they're mediocre songs, and I have heard him write some really good songs. I'm Your Captain is a good example of an exceptionally great song written. I mean, not only performed, but written. These songs, I think they're asking, we're getting really deep here. Well, you know what I mean? But now I'm getting into the point of, you're asking the Mark Farner to write two albums a year, almost, sometimes one album a year, two albums a year, and touring, and how much do you have in you? They made so much music in such a short time that I feel for this band, because a Nickelback doesn't get asked to write an album a year or two albums a year. They're asked to write an album every 5 years, and even they fuck it up.
Every 5 years.
So
where's my money?
And I feel for any band in that era, because it was like, if you didn't release an album a year, people said, well, what are you doing? Like, are you just sitting on your ass? I mean, that's how it was. Time moved very slow back then. As we know, time just seemed to move. Like, 1 year seemed to take 5 years to end.
Yeah, with no internet.
And no internet and nothing. Yeah, it did. I'm not going to belabor this, but Walk Like a Man has this lyric where it says, a little girl asked me what I'm going to do when I get old and blue and worn and clean through. What's old and blue?
Old and sad.
See, I did think of that. At first, I was going old and blue, like, what?
Dead guy.
Turn blue?
That's what color you turn when you're not breathing anymore.
I'm not so hard on it as I was when I first listened. I still felt almost every song that I looked at lyrically, except for We're an American Band, was extremely average lyric-wise. I was not happy Even the last song, Loneliest Rider, which seemed to have some meat to it, didn't have that much meat as I thought.
No, I thought that one that was the weakest song on the album for me.
So let's get to the one shining point that we both agree on this album. And which is, of course, the title song, We're an American Band, which interestingly, always great stories in rock and roll. Mark Farner says he wrote this whole song. And he gave it to Don Brewer because, and I believe him, Mark Farner seems like a very straight up dude. And he's a born again Christian and stuff like that. And he's just one of those, oh, you know, I did this. And he said that, you know, he wrote, he had that music, which it sounds like him. That music sounds like him. He takes no credit on this at all, I think. Rob, can you check on that for me?
Nope. My computer is occupied.
Anyways, I think Don Brewer gets all the credit on this or something like that. I'll check in a second. But he said he wrote this whole song and just decided that Don Brewer wasn't getting he needed some confidence and a boost. So not only did he let him sing it, but he gave him the whole credit for the song.
Yeah, the credit, the fraud is not really a good boost.
I agree. But I do believe him. It does sound so much like a Mark Farner song. I just love it. You know how hard it is? I've been criticizing Mark Farner here in his songwriting for the last 40 minutes. But it is so hard to write descriptive things and make it melodic and fit in. I don't know if people realize how hard that is. Stuff like, you got to write something about being up all night with Freddie King and how he likes to play poker and how he likes his booze and ladies. And you have to make that melodic. And he does a brilliant job of it, up all night with Freddie King.
I can't even do that. I always write lyrics first and then cram the music into it. And,
I'm not good at that. I'm good at writing about scenes, but I'm not good at put this in, put Sacramento in there. I said, fuck, man, really?
You know what rhymes with a mobster? Lobster.
Yeah, put lobster in there. And I'm terrible. It always sounds like it stands out like hugely when I listen to it, when I have to put a word in there. And this is all over the place. It like has to have Omaha in there. It has to have Freddie King. It has to have that poker and all that stuff. And it all comes in like molasses. It just flows. And as good as this song is, and I know we're not supposed to talk about it, but the remix on this and one of the bonus tracks is fucking deadly. This is where they took out the keyboard that goes that 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 that.
Oh
da,
yeah,
da,
yeah, yeah.
And they took it out, so all you hear is the fucking guitar, and it goes da da chicka 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 chicka, and it just it may be have been too rough for AM radio, but fuck. it even makes the song just blow your mind even more. See, that's why I say about the keyboard sometimes making the watering it down a little bit.
Yeah.
And sometimes for good. Like in We're an American Band, actually as a single, it works. We put that in there.
Well, I found, for most of the album, only is he... Well, he's just a supporting part. Like, don't hear too many standout parts. When I was talking about the parts where, you know, the band stops, one guy plays, it's never keyboards playing. It's drums,
no, you're or right. Bass or guitar. You're right. That's why the keyboards are used as the rhythm instrument.
Yeah.
And that's the part I have a problem with because I just feel it's weak. And this is the one that doesn't, actually. This is the one song on here that the guitar takes over as the rhythm instrument. And in both versions, in the remixed version and in this version, except the only thing that the keyboard is added for is the chorus where it goes, "We're an American Band." Dun, 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 just the one note, really. This is such a great song. I mean, you can't listen to this song in a car and not want to swerve your car.
Every fill, every riff, everything is just the right amount of time for what it's doing.
Is this what we're talking about when we say a perfect song? Just like we almost every week we mention
this
a song
is not just the absence of anything wrong with it. This is everything right. Like, wow.
Yes, everything's right. There is, I agree 100% with Rob on this. There is not 1 second that's wasted. There is not 1 second that sounds wrong.
Nothing goes on for too long or too short.
It's perfect. It sounds like a Todd Rundgren production as far as that is concerned, as far as it's got to be this long, and it's got to be this long, and in a good way, kind of like saying, this is okay, you guys want this as your hit single? Let me tell you what how it should be arranged.
Bands sometimes, rarely, during an outro or a song or during a solo can get a bit carried away.
Yes, that's what I mean.
15 minutes. And
and it's kind of like you can see Todd Rundgren say, listen, you guys can fuck around all you want for the other 7 songs. This song has to be exactly like I tell you to be. And that's why I think it's a greatly written song. They play it great. It's produced magnificently. It's arranged magnificently. Like we said, there is not a second that's wrong with this song. Yeah. It's a perfect song. And that's the only thing I can say is perfect. But you have changed my mind a little bit on this record, to be honest with you. I was going to be really harsh and give this 2 stars. I'm going to be really friendly and give it 2.5. Because even though I still think every other song on here is extremely mediocre, there are some things I think I was extra harsh on just because I was.
The 2 things I liked are the sound of the songs, and I also liked the putting together of the parts. I thought that the parts flowed together really well.
This is interesting about what you were saying. I'm going to say to people right now, because Rob knows what kind of music I like. He knows if he heard the first 3 Grand Funk albums, I know that he would say, oh, those are the albums that Gary's going to like because they're raw.
I got Survival. I've never listened to
it. I know you do because I've heard Survival from your thing. I had it for a while and I don't like it all that much. But Rob would know, Gary would like these first 3 records because they're raw and they're kind of like they just plugged in and played. And I bet you wouldn't like too much of these. Like, Rob knows. I'm more of the John Lennon type of,
And it shouldn't be take 275.
Exactly. but this is the record that a person like you, and who've never heard Grand Funk, never bought a Grand Funk Railroad album before, but want to buy one, I agree totally that this is the album to buy. This is the most palatable. And I agree with all the other critics and Rob that even though I dislike it because it's just not my cup of tea as far as this is concerned, but I totally agree with Rob's assessment of just like everybody else has given it 4.5 stars. I cannot disagree with what Rob said. This is the album you should be the first album you should buy if you want to dive into the, or listen to if you want to dive into the Grand Funk Railroad catalog. I would go with the first 3 albums because they're much rawer and they're much sloppier, but that's the kind of stuff I like. I mean, I like all stuff, but that's the kind of stuff I like the most.
Yeah. That's the sounds really diggle. Oh.
Yeah. So we really disagree on this record, but we did come... Rob didn't move too much at all, but I moved a little bit on this because Rob had some good points about the lyrics. I was really down about the lyrics, and then I kind
of
changed.
There's a bunch of rock stuff in there that is rock filler, but the fact that they actually have ideas that they go from start to finish with that are coherent and
well, you know, I try not to be too hard on rock musicians, especially in the 70s. If they're the guy writing all the songs on 10 albums in 7 years or whatever, because
It's like that hack David Bowie.
Like David Bowie, like holy smokes. Yeah, like how? You could just name all these people who made like 15 albums in the 10 years that the 70s were around, and their greatness shines through because they had a consistency through them. And you can't blame a guy who's not born with that talent. And that's also very sympathetic to me, is that people think, oh, they're so great. It's like, yeah, but they're born with that. And I know that these three guys, these three working class guys, were not born with a talent that some other people did, but look what they did with it.
Yeah, they weren't trying to change the world or teach people incredible lessons. They were trying to rock and roll, and
so unbelievably correct. Really. They were guys who were just like the people who listened to them. The guys, mostly the guys that were listening to them, because they had a huge male base, because it was a meat and potatoes, I'm working 9 to 5 type of thing, who liked their hard rock. They were also those guys playing that music. And for guys that weren't born, and this is something you're born with, you're either talented from birth or you're not. That's nothing that, you can work on being good. You can work on being good, you can. But if sometimes you can work really hard and you still can't write good lyrics. There are some people who can never write lyrics. So to have his lyrics mediocre, I've kind of come back on that a little bit, because I realize that you are born with either the ability to be a Dylan.
Because I was focusing on the good points and ignoring the bad ones.
But. Yeah, see, I was a lot of this at the time really bugged me about this album, and don't bug me about it now, because I'm taking all of this in context, and I admire this band a lot, because they're not born with a talent that so many other bands are born with, especially in the 70s. And yet look what they did with it.
Yeah, I do like the overall sound of this band.
So even though we vastly disagree, we both agree that this is the album to jump into if you're going to jump into Grand Funk Railroad.
Yeah, without hearing the other ones, this is what I think, this one's worth a listen.
Yes. So. Okay, again, oh my God. It's an hour and 20 minutes. Swear to God, we never, you know what? I don't do that all of a sudden and say, oh, I got to cut it off here. I always do that when I feel we've exhausted the topic, and we have.
And that's when it goes.
And that's when it goes one hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah. If it kind of grew for a little while, then it just leveled off here.
That's our show.
We feel it's time to go.
For next week,
something different.
We will not be putting on a show. We will be doing two shows next week because we have to catch up. But we will not be putting a show up on the internet next week. So remember that. Listen to one of our old shows. Listen to our Grease show if you want to hear me really get foamed at the mouth. I thought I was going to get foamed at the mouth on this one. And Rob kind of tuned me in a little bit. Rob kind of pointed out some things.
It's weird when you have two vastly different reviews for what is essentially the exact same sound.
It is. And you know what? The other person kind of calms you down and says, you know what? You're being a little bit harsh on that. And I'm going like, yeah, you know what? I am being a little bit harsh on the lyrics. I was really going to spend a lot of time dumping on the lyrics today. I really was. Like 2 weeks ago, I always said, I hate these fucking lyrics. And then you point out, well, no, blue means he's sad. And I was going like, well, I was looking for bad. I was looking, in a way, looking for, oh, blue means Zoe turns blue.
Exactly. To come up with good, you have to actually use your imagination and fill in the writing. So,
hey, we make mistakes too. Just to clarify, I have heard every Grand Funk song. Every Grand Funk song. I'm not a fan, but I do like a few of their albums. And they are not worthless. They are worth listening to if that's your type of music. They are definitely worth listening to. They're not like a certain Canadian band from Alberta who are not worth listening to on any sort of level. So our next theme we will be having will be 2 weeks from now. It's going to be super duper.
Super duper.
And I can say that because I already know what the theme is and the albums we were reviewing. Rob already knows one of the albums.
Because I know one of the albums.
We're doing it next week. Yeah. And
oh, I do. That's right.
Yeah, no, that's right. You better be ready.
It's been so long, it slipped my mind.
It's actually really exciting. What we're going to do, we do it every year. That's a hint. It's something that we started last year and are going to be doing every year until we decide we don't want to do the show anymore. When Rob pisses me off and I say, I can't work with this guy anymore. I can't.
Yeah, we'll see if a monkey even has you.
I want a separate limousine when I get here, okay? So until 2 weeks from now, we need you all to please take care. And I know everybody's getting sick out there. So, maybe by the time they hear this, everybody's cured.
It'll pass.
It'll pass. So stay safe, everybody, and all things will pass. Just write her off. Look at your own dink before you accuse me, all right?
Where is it?